Hey, you guys. I'm Jenny. This is Tomes of Terror. This is my horror book review show. So today, we are going to be talking about this book right here, The Cabin at the End of the World by Paul Tremblay. Now, those of you who have been watching my book review videos will note that that one was not on my 2021 TBR because I just kept seeing it recommended everywhere, so I just decided on a whim that I was going to pick it up. Now, this is actually not the first Paul Tremblay novel that I have read. About a year and a half ago, I read A Head Full of Ghosts, which I liked very, very much, also on a lot of people's recommendation. Actually, for this show, probably before the year is out, I will probably reread it and do a review on that one as well. But this was the, you know, Cabin at the End of the World was the second one that came up the most, and I really wanted to read it, and it's not very long, it's under 300 pages, so I thought, what the hell? So I went ahead and ordered it. Now, this book, I'm going to say right here, and, you know, I say this on most of them, because some books, I kind of spoil them, some of them, not so much. This one, I feel like I'm gonna have to spoil it because it's really, really hard to talk about this book if you can't spoil it. That said, this is one of those books that I think your experience reading it will be a lot better if you have no idea what's going on or, you know, what's happening or what kind of book it is even. Because that's kind of how I approached it. Because the thing about it is that the description of this book that's on the back and that's on Goodreads and stuff, very, very vague. And they do that on purpose. They don't really tell you what kind of book this is, what kind of novel it is. It's a horror novel, obviously. But they just kind of give you the barest minimum setup, which is literally maybe like the first 20 pages of the book. You don't have any idea like which way this thing is going. So if you want to read this book, I would recommend not watching this video because I'm going to spoil it because there's just no other way around it. You can't talk about the book without spoiling it. But if you want to read it, definitely don't watch this video because you need to come at it not knowing what's going to happen because I think that it's much more tense that way because I just came to it having no idea what it was about. And just the tension just builds up and builds up because you're just like, what the fuck is going on here? You know what I mean? Now, this book, it's pretty much, it's set only over a couple of days, like 2-3 days, something like that. And it's set all in one location. It is essentially, it's kind of like a home invasion type story, but not exactly. You know what I mean? Like, with a twist. So like I said, from here on out, I'm going to talk about what this book is about. So if you don't want to know anything about it, which I would recommend, then turn off the video, go read the book. Like I said, it's under 300 pages. It only took me probably like, you know, maybe 4 or 5 hours to read it and then come back and we can discuss it because there's a lot to discuss. This book is pretty fucked up. It's kind of fucked up. I will say that. Now, I read some of the other reviews of it on Goodreads. The reviews of this are like wildly all over the place. Some of them were like, you know, 5 stars, this was the most messed up and thing, and it was awesome and everything. And then some people were like 1 stars, they were so disappointed. I will say too, and like I said, spoilers, last warning. If you don't like, I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't like ambiguous endings, if you don't like books that don't explain a lot of shit, that leave a lot of shit open-ended, then this will probably really piss you off because this big time leaves kind of the central conceit of the book, which I'll get to in a bit, unanswered and unexplained. I liked that, and I liked because it kind of tied in with the whole, you know, kind of thematic thrust of the book. But if you need shit tied up and you need an ending and you want everything kind of sorted out and explained, then this is not the book for you because this does not do that. What's the setup of this book? Did I mention that it came out in 2018? It came out in 2018. So the setup of this book is there is a couple, Andrew and Eric, and they have a daughter, their adopted daughter, Wen. I believe she's 7. It's kind of coming up on her birthday, so she's going to be 8 years old. And they have gone on vacation to this very, very remote cabin. I think it's up, I don't remember where it's at. It's like Oregon or Washington State or something like that, or near the Canadian border. It doesn't really matter. So it's this cabin, and it's, you know, just in the middle of nowhere. There's no cell phone service. There's really no road to it. You know, there's like a dirt road, and it's really long, and it's like 4 or 5 miles to the main road. Nobody else around, super quiet. So they wanted this cabin specifically for this purpose because they just wanted to get away from things and unplug, you know, from the world for a little while. The cabin does have a TV, which is significant, but other than that, nothing. There's no cell phone service or anything like that. So at the very beginning of the book, when the little girl, she's a very like precocious, she's a really like intelligent child, because some of the stuff is kind of from her perspective. The perspective of this like shifts around a lot, you know, throughout all the characters. I didn't mind that, because I kind of liked, you know, the insight, you know, for each character or whatever. But, you know, just keep in mind that it hops around from character to character. There aren't that many characters, so it's not confusing or anything like that. So Wen is basically, you know, her dads are kind of hanging out on the pool deck or, you know, reading or whatever, like laying out in the sun. And Wen is kind of just playing in the front yard. She's catching grasshoppers and she's, you know, putting them in a little jar and naming them and, you know, saying what, you know, this one's bigger than this one. And she's trying to figure out what they eat. She's studying them and everything. She's very like scientific. So while she's doing that, this really big burly dude kind of comes shambling up the wall. Not shambling. That implies that it's like nefarious. Which, okay, I'll get to that in a little bit. But so this dude kind of approaches her. And obviously she's very wary because, you know, stranger danger. But he seems super nice, even though he's like this big gigantic man. But he seems very nice. He says his name is Leonard, and he kind of sits down in the grass with her, and he's just kind of like talking to her, and they're catching grasshoppers together, and she's like, oh, maybe this dude's all right, you know what I mean? And this opening scene, even though it's literally just a little girl in a yard catching grasshoppers, and then this dude wanders up this driveway, because like I said, it's a long driveway, like it's a long way from the main road, and she, you know, Wen didn't hear a car, she didn't see anybody else, and this dude just kind of wanders up and starts talking to her, is really, really good. It's like really tense, because you have no idea, you know, what this dude's motives are. You don't know what his end game is. Like, he seems nice, but, you know, a lot of fucking serial killers and kidnappers and shit like that seem nice too. So it's just like the whole time when they're having this conversation about the grasshoppers, and he's like asking her about herself and, you know, asking her about her dads and all this other kind of stuff. And she's kind of saying stuff about school, and he's really nice, but it's also like really sinister because you don't know why he's there. You don't know where he came from. So it's just this really good. So I will say, just in the first few pages, I was completely sucked in because I'm like, oh shit, man, what's going on here? So basically they talk for a little while, and then he says something a little strange, and I'm kind of paraphrasing because I don't want to like read like, you know, word for word from the book, but he basically says something like, I need to talk to your dads. They're not going to want to let me in, but they have to. Nothing that's going to happen is your fault. He tells her that, and he says, we need your help to save the world. Okay? Up to this point, this is pretty much in the Goodreads thing. I think, like, it even, like, on the back of the book, this is as far up as it goes. And like I said, this is literally, like, the first 15, 20 pages of the book is just the two of them talking, and then him saying this weird-ass thing. So, like I said, if you just wanted a little bit of a synopsis, that was it. And from now on, like I said, I'm just going to spoil the shit out of it, so... Again, I know I said the last time was final warning, but this is the final warning, okay? Just saying. So at this point, even though Leonard seems super nice and everything like that, she's starting to get a little bit nervous when he starts saying stuff like that, because that's a little weird. That's a little weird thing to say. And then she gets even more freaked out when three more people come walking up the driveway, and they're carrying what appear to be like homemade weapons. Like they're kind of like a stick, like with garden tools like sticking out of them and stuff. I saw another reviewer saying like some purge type shit. You know, it's just like somebody put these weapons together like out of garden tools and whatnot. And she notices too that all four of them, Leonard and the other two and the other three people, it's another man and two women, are all wearing a similar thing. They all have like jeans on, and then they all have button-up shirts, but they're all different colors. And at this point, Wen's like, yeah, fuck this, I'm out. So she runs inside the house. Now, at this point, the four people, they come up to the cabin and start trying to convince Andrew and Eric to let them in because they have to talk to them about something, and they keep promising, look, we don't want to hurt you, but we had to come here. We were drawn here, and you guys have to help us save the world, or, you know, some really, really bad shit is going to happen. Andrew and Eric, not surprisingly, as most normal people would, are like, yeah, fuck off. Like, what the hell are you even talking about? Like, you're coming to the cabin, trying to get in the cabin with weird weapons and spewing some nonsense about you have to help us save the world. I'm like, they're like, no, we're not having it. Also, they try to call the cops. Like I said, cell phones don't work, but they do have a landline. They try to call the cops, but one of the four, I believe it was Sabrina, she cut the phone line, which again is not really endearing these people to Andrew and Eric. They're not doing a very good job of conveying whatever it is that they have to convey because they just keep coming off as threatening, even though they keep saying that they're not threatening. So, like I said, this whole time, this whole story takes place in this cabin with these seven characters, Andrew and Eric and their daughter Wen, and the four people that, you know, that came to the cabin from who knows where. So there's the only seven characters in this whole entire book. And like I said, it takes place only over 2 or 3 days, I think. So at one point, as I said, not surprisingly, Andrew and Eric are just not having us. Like, these are just like crazy people. We don't know where they came from. It's like, what are they doing here? They have weapons. They cut our phone line. So obviously we're not going to let them in. Now at this point, the four are like, look, we don't really want to have to do this, but we're going to have to force our way in because, you know, you guys really need to help us. It's really, really important and all this other shit. So there's all of this kind of like back and forth, and they finally bust into the cabin and they tie up Andrew and Eric. At which point, they don't tie up Wen though. And like I said, they keep saying, I'm so sorry, you know, we really didn't want to have to do it like this and blah, blah, blah. But basically, their story is that they have had apocalyptic visions of the end of the world. And whoever is giving them these visions, you're assuming it's God, has told them that Andrew, Eric, and Wen have been chosen for whatever reason. One of them has to sacrifice one of the other of them in their family. Otherwise, the entire world will end. It is never explained why Andrew and Eric and Wen were chosen. They never explained that. They're like, look, we don't know. We don't know why we were chosen. We just all started having these same visions of the end of the world. And we had a vision of your cabin. We had a vision of your family. So we know that this is what's going to happen. And if you guys don't choose one of the three in your family to sacrifice willingly, then the entire world is going to end and everyone is going to die. That's their story. Another aspect of their story is that, because of course, Andrew and Eric don't believe them. I mean, who would? Nobody would believe that, right? Like some just random fucking people turn up at your cabin and be like, oh, by the way, you know, is it? Everybody'd be like, man, fuck off. Well, fuck off with that. So indeed, they do not believe. Now, what ends up happening though, is that as the days go on, if like the longer they take to sacrifice one of their own, the four people that came to the cabin, they have to sacrifice one of their number. And it's almost kind of like they go into a trance, like they get taken over by whatever it was that gave them the visions, and they have to kill one of their number. At which point, they're like, okay, well, now the disasters are going to happen. So Leonard tells them, okay, the first disaster is going to be, you know, there's going to be this massive earthquake and then a massive tsunami. And so as soon as he's kind of like, okay, well, you have to like choose to make a sacrifice. If you don't, then we're going to have the earthquakes and the tsunamis. So then he turns the TV on. Like I said, it's significant that there is a TV in the cabin. So then he turns the news on. And indeed, there has been a huge earthquake and then another earthquake. And then there's a tsunami and it kills like a whole bunch of people like along the western seaboard, I believe. I can't remember what part of the country. It was parts of California and Washington State or something like that. And it wipes out like a whole bunch of people. And he's like, see, it's like, if you don't, the longer you go without sacrificing one of your number, then this is just going to keep getting worse and worse. And then once all of us are dead, then, because like I said, if they don't pick one, then one of the four, they go into a trance and beat one of their own to death, which is pretty horrific. Then it's just going to keep ramping up. And then once all four of us are dead, if you guys don't sacrifice me, then the entire world is going to end and everyone's going to die. Now, so this goes on, and obviously, like I said, Andrew and Eric don't really believe them, but there is enough of an uncertainty there, because obviously they're just like, okay, well, we're just going to wait it out, because these four people are obviously crazy and are just going to kill each other off. So, you know, let's just wait them out, then they'll all be dead, and then we can get the fuck out of here. Because they don't, I mean, the four people, they fucked up their car, so they couldn't leave. And they have a car, but they didn't save, like, they hid the keys and all this other kind of shit. And they can't call for help because there's no, the landline's been cut. So it goes on, like, over the days where, you know, like I said, I think it's only 2 or 3 days, where they keep killing one of their own, like, one of the four people. And then he'll turn on the TV and he's like, oh, look, a whole bunch of planes fell out of the sky. That's, you know, the sky falling or whatever. And so it's really interesting that some shit that happened, and it's funny because the two dads, Andrew and Eric, I think it's Andrew is real a rationalist. He's like an atheist. And so he has an explanation for every single thing. He's like, dude, it's like, all you have to do is like turn on the news at any time, like cable news at any time, and there's going to be some fucking disaster on there. He's like, you know, yeah, it's earthquake and tsunami, that shit happens. And it's like, then the next one was like a bird flu. And he's like, that's been going on for months and months. It's like, you know, and maybe they even knew about it beforehand. And so they put that into their narrative. Whereas Eric, the other one, he's kind of a Catholic. He's not super, you know, fundamentalist about it or anything like that, but he is a believer. So he's almost kind of like believing this shit. You know what I mean? He's like, but that all this can't be a coincidence and all this other kind of stuff. So as it goes on, it's really interesting because it's almost like there's no way to know if you were wrong or not. Because if, you know, if for some reason, like Andrew, Eric, and Wen, they did believe these people, and they were like, okay, well, we'll sacrifice one of our number, and they do it, then the world would just go on. So you don't know if the world would have ended if they didn't do that. You know what I'm saying? And as I said, in this book, you do not find out. They don't tell you. So as the shit goes on, like I said, the four people who, spoiler alert, I guess, are supposed to represent the four horsemen of the apocalypse. That's why they all have different colored shirts on. It's, you know, it's kind of goes along with, you know, the pale horse and all the other kind of stuff. So they all have different, like, one has a white shirt, one has a kind of pearl, like, off-white shirt, one has, like, a, you know, whatever the colors were that represented it. But they're supposed to be the four horsemen of the apocalypse. So basically, three of them are dead, because obviously Andrew and Eric refused to sacrifice them to anybody. So there's kind of all kind of tussling and stuff like that. And then there is a really, really horrible moment. Andrew, I think it's, is it Eric or Andrew? I can't believe, but I can't remember. But like one of them actually is able to get out of his restraints. He runs out to the SUV that they drove there, and he is able to get his gun out. So he brings the gun back into the thing. It's like they, you know, have this big tussle over it. During the tussle, and this is really upsetting, you guys. During the tussle, Wen gets shot in the face and killed accidentally while they're struggling over the gun. Now, it's really, really interesting how this is put across in the story, because it's almost kind of like it's a big deal and you see like a lot of the aftermath, but it's really interesting that it's not, they don't make this huge over dramatic. I mean, it happens just like that, like in the blink of an eye. And then the reactions that they have to it, because everyone's in shock and they're like freaking out. And it's very, very realistic. So I will say that this part, this was like super upsetting, because really, Wen and her two dads, I mean, the characterization in this is so, so good that when it happens, you're just kind of like, you just feel like you've been fucking smacked in the mouth. You know what I mean? Because it's like, this is little girl and you thought something, you thought they were going to get away, or you thought something, and then that happens, and it's just kind of like out, it's not out of the blue, but it's just like really, it's like a punch in the gut, particularly because you've spent so much time with these characters and you've really like started to like them. So Wen gets killed, but because she was killed accidentally, the rules say that it has to be a willing sacrifice. No one meant to sacrifice her. It just happened accidentally when they were struggling over the gun. So her death doesn't count. Which means that maybe if what all the stuff that the Four Horsemen are saying is true, then Andrew and Eric, one of them will have to kill the other one willingly, or one will have to kill himself willingly. Now, once Wen is dead, and they're and then all of the other, you know, the Four Horsemen are dead except for one, and then finally she is just kind of like, okay, well, I don't like this. I don't like the way this is going. You know, if this is God that gave me these visions and drew me here, and you know, is going to end the world because this, I don't like it. That's fucked up. And so she says that she's going to lead Andrew and Eric to where they hid the keys to their vehicle. And it's like, you guys, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if the world's going to end. So you guys just try to go. Just get out of here. So that's pretty much where it ends. Well, she takes them. She shows them the keys. Then she kills herself. So Andrew and Eric are left with their dead daughter. And they're kind of discussing, well, you know, it's like, I could kill you and then I could kill myself. Or it's like, you know, the one says, like, well, I could kill myself. And then they have this whole thing about it. But then finally they decide, you know what, we're just going to go. We're just going to see what happens. So the fact that they didn't sacrifice themselves and now all of the Four Horsemen are dead, you don't ever find out whether the world ended or not, or whether those people were completely full of shit and were just four crazy people who happened to meet on a random message board, and which is how they got together. Because, you know, they got on a message board and they were like, hey, I'm having these weird apocalyptic visions. Anybody else? And then, you know, and then that happens and they all got kind of drawn to certain areas. So I really, really like this, the whole like ambiguity about, you know, is the world going to end? Were they telling the truth? You know, or were they just delusional? Because you could see it either way. Like there were, yes, there was a lot of coincidences. Yes, there was this, that, and the other, but there was still plausible deniability. There was still reasonable explanations for a lot of the shit that happened. So it's completely possible that these people were just nuts and happened to, you know, meet in a message board and they were kind of like feeding into each other's delusions. And then they went to find these random people and that the world isn't going to end at all. And Andrew and Eric might be totally fine. Obviously, other than their daughter being dead, which is horrible. Or it could be that they just said, okay, well, we're just going to go on and see what happens. And it could be that the Four Horsemen were correct and the world is entirely going to end. So I kind of like that he left it up to you, I guess, to decide what you think is going to happen. I don't really know what I thought was going to happen, because I think the whole time I was reading it, I was sitting there, I was kind of more on Andrew's side, like the skeptic dude. I'm like, if this happened to me, I would just think these people were nuts. And there's no way I would do it, because there was a reasonable explanation for everything. It's like some of the shit that happened was weird, but it's nothing you couldn't explain away rationally. So I really like that he kind of like left that ambiguity. So I'm kind of more of the mind that the world probably wasn't going to end, but it could go either way. So it's one of those kind of books that it'll just kind of make you think about that kind of like the end of the world, like what would happen if you were in this situation and all this other kind of crap. So yeah, it was really like food for thought, really well written. The characterization, like I said, was really, really good. The tension was really great, like just kind of ramped up and ramped up. I mean, I read it really quick because I just, you know, I wanted to see what happened. It's like, where the hell is this going? Where are they going with this? You know, then when Wen got killed, it was like this big fucking slap in the face. And I was just like, holy shit, I can't believe you did that. I don't know if I'd call it a fun read necessarily, because it's kind of fucked up and kind of disturbing. Pretty gory too, like when the Four Horsemen people start killing each other off. They do it like in a really horrible, like bludgeoning kind of way with their weird tools or whatever. So it's like there's a lot of gore in it, a lot of fucked up shit in it. I don't know. I just found it like really, really compelling. I thought it was really, really good, even though it was like nothing like I was imagining. You know what I mean? It was kind of like Home Invasion meets Revelation, you know, the Book of Revelation. It was kind of that type of thing, which is weird, but I was into it. I was into it. So yeah, but basically, as I said, this is really good. And I hear a lot about Paul Tremblay, and I've read one of his other books, as I said, Head Full of Ghosts, which was also very, very good. I think I liked Head Full of Ghosts slightly better than this one, but I don't know. It's kind of hard. They're really close. And also the stories are very, very different. So it's kind of hard to compare them. But if you've read some of his other stuff, you know, and you haven't read this one yet, I definitely would recommend this one. As I said, it's different than Head Full of Ghosts. And I think all of his stuff is kind of, you know, different from one another. He has a style, but not, you know, every book isn't the same thing or in the same style. Like, he likes to do different things. So definitely check it out. I found it really compelling. Like I said, now some people on Goodreads really did not like it and found it really disappointing, particularly because of the ambiguity of how it ended. It's like, it wasn't tied up. There were some other things that were left unexplained. Like at one point, one of the men had been the victim of a hate crime like several years earlier. And he thought that one of the dudes that came there, who was going by the name of Redmond, was actually the dude that had assaulted him many years ago. And they never, you know, and he's like certain of it. So he's like, that's how I know that these people are full of shit, because I know who that dude is. And he's lying to you about what his name is, because his name isn't Redmond. So, but they never do tell you. You know, the book does not tell you like whether that dude was actually the dude that assaulted him or whether he was just seeing it that way because he was looking for something to grasp onto, like why, you know, a reason that he could say that these people were full of shit. So it's just really, really intriguing. It had all these like questions that were left unanswered, but left unanswered for a purpose, if that makes any sense. But yeah, definitely, definitely a good one. I would recommend this. Like I said, it's kind of messed up. You know, kids getting shot in the face. That's a little messed up. but yeah, if you're into that kind of stuff, if you've read any of his other books and haven't read that one, then I definitely recommend this one. So check it out. And I will see you on the next one. Bye.